Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Hindle. I'm here with my co-host, Gary LaRude. This is our second podcast in our series with Molex on 5G technologies. And today we are exploring the different component challenges of 5G sub-6 gigahertz networks versus millimeter wave. To discuss this subject with us, we have Roger Kaufman, Senior Director of Product Management and Marketing, and also William Spink, Global Director of Engineering, both from Molex. Welcome, Roger and William.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So let's just start off on the high level, maybe with Roger, or some comments about, you know, even though the earliest rollouts of 5G in the US, a lot of them were millimeter wave, why will most of the deployments be sub-6 gigahertz?
I think the carriers, as well as the manufacturers of the equipment, are struggling with some of the propagation characteristics of millimeter wave and the actual density that these types of systems will have to be deployed if you're going to try to incorporate millimeter wave into mobile telecommunications. The early millimeter wave deployments in the US were for fixed wireless access. I think there's still potential value in that type of an application. But for broader market appeal, I think sub-6 gigahertz has much greater potential, especially for mobile device.
Yeah, I would add to that, it comes down to cost of deployment, right? I mean, the cost to deploy the millimeter wave is a big thing, and I think that'll define its success for sure.
So the extension of that is all devices will need sub-6 gigahertz capability for both networks and antennas. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, a good example is the second largest network operator here in the U.S., has been deploying 5G down below 1 gigahertz at 2.5 gigahertz, as well as taking advantage of some of the millimeter wave frequencies at 39 gigahertz. They call it their layer cake approach.
Yeah, so can you talk a little bit more about those frequencies that will be used? Because I know like the sub-6 gigahertz, there's mid-band that will be for high density maybe, and then the low band for more rural areas. How is that going to play out?
Yeah, the frequencies that are currently being looked at or deployed is the 600 and 700 megahertz, depending on who owns what specific frequency spectrum, as well as 2.5 gigahertz. And the recent C-band auctions in the U.S. will also provide carriers with frequency spectrum up in the 3.8 to 4 gigahertz range.
Yeah, and you know, to add on to that, in the millimeter wave arena, you know, you have several bands, but the N257 band, which is 26.5 gigahertz to 29.5 gigahertz, seems to be the most prevalent right now, where most people are venturing into.
Are there any differences globally on what frequencies? I think there's a little bit slightly different millimeter wave frequencies in the U.S. versus Asia.
Yeah, depending on which country you look at, some are targeting 24 gigahertz or 27 gigahertz as the middle band of the spectrum. The U.S. is targeting 28. And then 39 gigahertz, again, is available in the U.S. and in some foreign markets.
You know, they have an N261 band, which is 27.5 to 28.35 gigahertz. And if, you know, that kind of come, if you're able to get the 257 band, that band is inside of it. So you pick up both, but Roger's right. The N258 band, which is starts at 24.25 gigahertz. That's another one that's getting a lot of questions and asks for, so to speak.
So do you have all of the N bands memorized now, knowing the exact frequencies?
I wouldn't say that.
I have a chart on the wall in my office.
Well, it was just rolling off your tongue, so I thought you must have it down pretty well.
I can stumble over that once in a while too. So
I was just going to say, we've been engaged with several of the radio manufacturers on some of their systems for millimeter wave. And so that's why we're getting requests for different frequency bands, depending on where their end customer is located.
So when we kicked off, you said cost was a driver in terms of the deployment. Can you contrast the cost issues that OEMs and network providers are seeing between sub-6 gigahertz and millimeter wave?
I think the big thing for us is just, you know, these are passive, you know, what we're supplying are passive devices. And, you know, up at those elevated frequencies, you got to do a lot of things differently than you do down in the sub 6 gigahertz range. So when you're up in, you know, the 30 gigahertz range, material choices, tolerances, you know, capability in your manufacturing processes all become a big, big deal. And so that's a real big factor on the engineering side for sure.
So how will massive MIMO be cost effective with so many channels needed for the radios, and how are you addressing cost of that?
Well, that's a great question. I'm sure Roger could talk all day about this, but yeah, I mean, the deployment of the number of, let's stay on the interconnect side, interconnects inside these radios is vastly increased. So we're seeing a lot of pressures to do things differently. You know, we're not getting any relief on specs. Matter of fact, I would argue that the performance specs are going up while the price point is going down. But yeah, I mean, you got to get out of that traditional mindset. You know, we're looking at other options outside of our traditional core manufacturing processes, like machining, moving to stamping and forming and molding and replacing those higher expense components with lower cost components. For sure, that's definitely one way.
How about from an antenna point of view? You have the interconnect and cabling, but also out to the antenna.
Yeah, we started developing with some of our partners some interconnects to attach a massive MIMO antenna to the filter module. And that's taken several iterations and several different paths to the point that in one application, we're actually turning the connector into an antenna itself or the radiating element.
That's interesting. So I want to come back to something that you said, Bill, about the material choices at the different frequency bands. How do you choose the materials and the configurations that will meet the performance requirements, but also try to give you the best cost position? Obviously, you mentioned that costs are going down, or your customers are asking for costs to go down. So you're doubly challenged, particularly at millimeter wave with higher performance, more difficult propagation, but people don't want to pay any more money.
Yeah. Material choice is a big, big deal, especially when you're moving out of, you know, our traditional Teflon dielectrics into more molded materials, maybe a little bit materials that are more friendly for processing like LCP. So making sure we have the right dielectric constants selected. And again, it's just looking at other ways, other processes, plated plastics, things along those lines, stamping and forming, insert molding, molding, and trying to move away from the, you know, the traditional RF connector and its processes, which is machining.
Yeah, where that becomes especially critical is if you think about the massive MIMO while we're on that topic, and you're talking maybe 32 transmit, 32 receive signals, the actual power per channel or per signal is quite low. And therefore, transmission loss becomes critical. And so while the desire is to go to molded type materials, they tend to have higher dielectric constants. So it's a real fine line, a real balancing act, trying to get the best performance out of the best lower cost material.
So are you having to actually change your manufacturing processes for, say, millimeter wave?
Good thing about Molex, very, very vast company with a very, you know, large array of competencies. And so some of these things that we're doing are outside of our business unit's competency, but these processes are within Molex, no problem, and a lot of knowledge and vast knowledge. That's one of the advantages of Molex for sure.
So you talked about balancing the cost and performance. What are the critical performance requirements of the components, and how are you addressing them in manufacturing and design?
Yeah, it's all about, you know, first and foremost is electrical performance. So return loss, isolation, those are key. So it's material choice, design, making sure we're, you know, maintaining the proper impedance control across the part throughout the transmission line. That's key. And there's a lot on the interconnect side, there's a lot of mechanical requirements. As they bring these systems together mechanically, they're pretty complex. And there's a lot of tolerance buildup. So your connector system has to have pretty liberal float attributes where this thing can float and pick and be able to work inside this tolerance stack up environment in the radios. So, and yeah, we're addressing all of that now. So
how about PIM, passive intermodulation? That was always a big thing in 4G. Is that still relevant? 5G is a big challenge.
You know, Roger can comment on this too. For, you know, the interconnects that are inside the radio, it comes and goes, but mostly the power is getting lower, so it doesn't seem to be as big of a deal. Once in a while, we'll see a spec for it here and there, but many cases, there's not even a spec for it given anymore.
No, I agree. I think, you know, again, when you get into these multiple input, multiple output antenna requirements, you know, the transmit power is, you know, in the single digit or low double digit watts, you know, where the old 4G systems were, you know, 80 to 100 watts, you might be looking at 10 or 12 watts. And so PIM is less of a concern or less of a question from our customers. Oh, it's more, again, the attenuation.
So we haven't talked about size and weight, and obviously that is a critical requirement that for massive MIMO and also small cells at millimeter wave that are being deployed on city light posts and that sort of thing. How is that affecting the requirements that you're seeing, and then how are you addressing those requirements?
Yeah, that is critical. And I think the movement towards lower cost materials and molding and stamping has helped us immensely, because just quite frankly, the weight is less, period. Pretty simple. It's going to translate to lower weight for sure.
And so are those materials typically going to plastic? Is that always the lowest cost, or are there other types of metals or alloys that you consider?
Yeah, I mean, we look at die cast, right? Die casting of some sort is always, you know, an option. But we're finding ourselves more and more using plastics, considering the core competencies we have internally for molding, the availability of different materials and their ability to process, and of course, weight, right? Weight is a big deal.
Great. So you've kind of summed up all these performance and manufacturing challenges. What's your outlook for 2021 for the 5G market?
From my perspective, the 5G market in 2021 is rapidly expanding, especially in the low and mid-band areas. I think the millimeter wave is probably still a few years out as far as true broad acceptance across the carrier space. Again, once they figure out the challenges, be it reflective blankets and repeaters and things like that, where they can optimize the radio base station placements and still get around corners and inside of buildings through, you know, things like that. Once those challenges are solved, I think millimeter wave, because of the tremendous bandwidth potential in millimeter wave, will become more prolific.
Yeah, I agree with everything Roger said. And, you know, our interactions with our customers are showing this. We have a lot of interaction on both sides, the sub 6 gigahertz and on the millimeter wave. And yeah, I think the outlook going forward is very good.
Do you see any differences regionally about how things are rolling out? Because I know China was maybe favoring sub 6 gigahertz and the U.S. millimeter wave, and maybe that trend will change in each area.
Yeah, we've definitely seen sub 6 as the dominant 5G frequency in China. And I would say China is well ahead of even us in the U.S. I'd say it's China, U.S., Asia Pacific North, you know, with Japan and Korea. They've really gone all in on millimeter wave and you know, other different technologies, including O-RAN. They're probably the millimeter wave leaders, if you will. Europe, I think the countries are still trying to figure out which spectrums they want to make available to the carriers. Some of the spectrum licensing is still to be worked out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, the indication is from some of our customers that they're making some big bets on millimeter wave. You know, it's going to happen. But to Roger's point, it's got to be done cost effectively. And when that all gets, you know, rolls out globally and uniformly across the globe, we'll see. But it's going to happen. For sure.
So certainly the U.S. operators have invested quite a bit in terms of millimeter wave spectrum. And we saw last year a major auction that I think went up to 40 gigahertz. Are you seeing any pull at 40 gigahertz, or is it all down in the 24 to 28 range?
We've had some inquiries up there, but yeah, the primary focus is, in the 28 gigahertz range. And I think there's some challenges, as we talked about earlier. As you keep moving up in frequency, it gets more and more difficult, right? So now you're jumping up from, 28 gigahertz to 40. And so it's just easier to start a little lower and get something going and then kind of work your way up. Because the solution may be a little different up at the 40 gigahertz.
Right? I think it depends on use case as well. I mean, we've got a customer making millimeter wave radios for 5G over in Asia and in Japan that their use case that they're really focused on is controlling, using 5G to control industrial equipment for mining and heavy construction and things like that. And, they're in that 39 gigahertz range.
I did want to ask one more thing. You had mentioned Open RAN. Are you seeing any differences in requirements flowing back to you when Open RAN is implemented, or is it generic for you?
The main thing is it's creating new potential customers for us. Right. There are companies, even here in the U.S. that are starting to create almost white box type devices. So the carrier isn't necessarily dependent on the traditional radio manufacturer. I think the challenge from a carrier perspective is they've got a heavy investment in 4G LTE equipment and all these tower leases and everything already. And they have to figure out what's the best economical model. From an OPEX and a CAPEX perspective, is it O-RAN or is it the traditional RAN? I think if it's a greenfield startup like a Dish Networks, O-RAN makes perfect sense.
Well, thank you, Roger and Bill, for joining us and sharing your perspectives about 5G. It's certainly a fast moving market, and it's good to have some perspective from the two of you who are right on the front line of it and the differences between sub-6 gigahertz and millimeter wave equipment. So we appreciate you sharing your design expertise and also giving us a view of your technology and what you're seeing in the market.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.